when you realize that there's a huge segment of the world's population living in poverty and without fresh water supplies and things like that, when you kind of, you know, sort of stack yourself in the rankings, taking that into account, you realize that actually, you know, even if you get into debt and lose everything, you're still very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things have got to really go bad before you are actually losing out.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers, or no trousers at all.
Hello, ladies, hobos and mofos, and gentlemen.
Exactly.
So, we're going to have a philosophical debate, as we often do. And what are our topics of choice today, Mr. Apple?
You had two very interesting suggestions. One of them about businesses maximizing for utility instead of profit. Maybe we shall start with that one.
I think we should.
So maybe give it a little personal, touch. How did you get in, you know, how did you get across? And what made you think about that, basically? I mean, it's not about the discovery of the idea.
So I guess I've kind of discovered it in my own independent way. You know, I've never been particularly attracted towards doing something that's charitable, so to speak, although I'm not opposed to it. And I do try and kind of live a light life. I try not to sort of tread too heavy and, you know, eat other people's lunches and that kind of thing. I try to kind of fit in a harmonious way with the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that general kind of attitude has always been niggling at the back of my mind. And, but I haven't kind of like sought out working for a charitable organization apart from when I was much younger. So anyway, I always notice how in entrepreneurial circles, people tend to measure success in terms of finances. And we've talked about this before, you know, talked about how kind of saying the word million kind of gets people's attention.
Yes.
And that's also a bit of a fallacy because often the smarter lessons come from failures or from people who've tried and failed, rather than the lucky ones, which just got the equivalent of good lottery numbers and then made a lot of money. So I've always noticed how I've always been a little bit kind of skeptical of the kind of big financial numbers, just like a little bit skeptical of always measuring things that way. And also looking at my own businesses and the things that I've been involved in, I've actually walked away from a few what could have been very profitable enterprises, which I didn't feel I could get behind. One of them was in the gambling niche. And initially being interested in the technology behind it and things like that, but I've soon realized that I had no interest in the gambling industry and I didn't really want to be part of it because it's not that I like to take a moral position, but just, you know, from a sort of utilitarian, I don't know if that's the right word, but from a position of kind of being useful and advancing the living standards and awareness, enlightenment or whatever of those around me and the rest of the world, I felt that that was moving backwards. So I have stepped away from a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And noticed that the things that I choose to get involved in, you know, they, I do feel I can sleep at night. You know, I'm not kind of selling crap to people.
Yeah.
I'm like the, I am really behind the services I've created. And I find that that's very good. I don't like the idea of just making empty money. Although I, you know, I do like the idea of making money, I can't deny, but I know that it's not the only thing. And in fact, really, this is where I talk about changing maximizing for profit to utility is that I know that maximum profit isn't maximum happiness. It's just like the default mantra of business. Whereas I think that, really we don't require vast quantities of cash to be happy. So it's like it's smart to move the goalposts from maximum profit to moreover towards utility and usefulness. So the idea is you do something that's both profitable but also useful and helpful, and you're basically not just selling crap to people that don't need it.
Okay. So is this... what's the difference then between, or is there a difference, and if so, what is it, between what you are proposing and talking about and is there a term called social entrepreneuring?
Social entrepreneur. That's the new word for charity.
Yeah, okay. But we're not talking about necessarily, just to define utility, we're not necessarily talking about having a business that revolves around bringing fresh water to people in, parts of the world where that's a problem still. We're just talking
That's a charity. Okay. That's a charity. In a sense, that's kind of better because that's like, delivering help where it's most needed. I'm more talking about just like somebody who's entrepreneurial and, moving the goalposts away, slightly away from profit and more towards being useful.
Okay, so basically a good question to ask would be, does it really help somebody? And that would also mean that our friend who famously says that he's selling something to people that they don't really need.
Yeah.
That kind of business would basically then fall through would not go through the filter, basically.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to pass a moral judgment. It's just...
Well, I mean, he's absolutely aware of it, and there's a reason why he does what he does, and I'm also pretty sure that he's not going to stick with that forever, and that is, he's going to use some of the profits to maybe move towards utility.
Yeah, I think the same.
And that's just to, tie in some of the things that we have already talked about on past episodes. That's also part of the discussion that we had with John Bardos about the idea or about the question whether you can actually start with social entrepreneuring. That's like basically a viable idea, or if you make some kind of money and then make the best use of that money and invest it and move your business or your entrepreneurship towards utility. Do you know where we basically discussed the...
Indeed.
Yeah.
In fact, it's kind of a luxury to be thinking like this, because at the end of the day, you've got to pay the rent.
Yes.
And if being useful isn't paying the rent, are you going to not have a place to live and continue trying to be useful? Or are you going to do the sell shit people don't need or whatever it is so you can pay the rent and continue to live in your house? So there's, it's not like there's a kind of clear black and white line you can draw here.
Yeah.
The overall kind of point that I wanted to raise was just about kind of redefining the goalposts, moving the goalposts. Because as I was saying, I notice in the entrepreneurial circles I move in, and indeed on the internet at large, you note how it seems to be about the millions and the bigger the number, the more kind of impressive and successful it is. And I think that that's perhaps a little bit of a false goal. And, once you've made more than a certain amount of personal income, you're kind of high and dry, and you really no longer need to pursue the big financial goals. And even before that, I think you can certainly kind of choose a path that's going to be more useful. Because in a sense, it's a bit of a scarcity mindset if you're thinking, oh shit, I need to do whatever makes me the most money as quickly as possible. It's like our good friend Edmund, he's like, you know, I don't need savings because I just know I'll be able to earn money. I know, like, wherever I am in the world, whatever I'm doing, I can create a money supply. Mm-hmm. So kind of like this idea that you need to sort of get rich first before you can do other things. It seems a bit of a scarcity mindset. It's suggesting that you think that at some point you won't be able to create any more income. So you've got to do it all first before you can do everything else.
Mm-hmm. So here's a couple of things that came to mind when you were talking about that. So I was considering the question whether both things have to or can, you know, come together. And I think, I guess that, for example, CD Baby is a good example, also a very popular example, where Derek Sivers created a business that had a high utility value at the time. As far as I understand, he made it possible for smaller bands and artists to release and sell their records on CD and basically help them, you know, find a way around getting a record label and being signed for a deal and stuff. And he created a really successful business that kind of started with, you know, a lot of independent bands and stuff. And so high utility and high profit in that example. I think we also have on past podcasts that ArtWeb is also kind of like in that category. It's it's definitely utility. It's not, pricing is really fair, helps people get a certain job done. And now even the investor All-Stars.
Yeah. They shortlisted us for digital innovation in art.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So there's a high level of satisfaction, at least for some kinds of people. I know that we experienced that, where we also realized that doing something like that is, you know, it's just, as you said, like not only having a good night's sleep, but it's a good feeling to have, as long as you are not the one losing out in the whole process. I mean, I think if you do the utility thing, but in the end, it turns out that you are worst off in the whole chain, then that's bad. But if everything is kind of balanced, then it's fine.
I would argue that pretty much anybody in the developed world is kind of okay. When you realize that there's a huge segment of the world's population living in poverty and without fresh water supplies and things like that, when you kind of, you know, sort of stack yourself in the rankings, taking that into account, you realize that actually, you know, even if you get into debt and lose everything, you're still very privileged. You know, things have got to really go bad before you are actually losing out.
Did you have any kinds of specific ideas around creating utility instead of focusing on profit?
Well, in a sense, generally businesses are creating utility because, you know, they're solving people's problems and they're doing it to an extent where people are willing to part with their cash for it. So it's more of like just a little sort of heuristic or filter to use when approaching business. I'd say, but the more of the key thing is just coming back to my original point, is just learning to move the goalposts, because you'll note that people tend to be dazzled by the millions and the financial successes. And it's more that thinking that I'm, you know, trying to reset. I think, you know, in a sense, a lot of people's businesses already are quite useful. Okay, this, you know, maybe selling cat furniture isn't quote unquote useful, but I don't know, it kind of is, you know, making sure there's fresh water in poorer parts of Africa is extremely helpful and useful. Okay, but it's like, you know, not everybody's going to be doing that. There's all these kind of different needs being met by different people. Yeah. So it's not necessarily that people need to drastically change what they're doing. It's just a little to reset a little what their aims are. Let me give you a case study, an example.
Yeah, cool.
So I've been coming up across this with Tokyo Cheapo because it's, you know, it's getting to be a very popular site. You know, we've smashed through 70,000 monthly uniques recently. But it still doesn't make much money, really. We make a pittance from AdSense. However, you know, we're leaving money on the table with, we constantly get asked to do like advertorial type things, or we could kind of, if we like, you know, went to the advertising model as some other publications in Tokyo do, they're, you know, they're very advertorial based. Like one of the main, expat stroke tourist English language magazines and websites in Tokyo is, so it's all advertorial, really. There is, you know, it's very thin on non-advertorial content. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to compromise our editorial integrity. You know, I would rather Tokyo Cheapo be a kind of successful and fun side project that maintains its editorial integrity than I quote-unquote sell out and just focus on, you know, making as much money as I can through advertising.
All right.
You know, for me, the model for the Tokyo Cheapo and indeed the other cities, this kind of network, is firstly creating a sustainable editorial team. So it's got enough income to keep an editorial team going and keeping the editorial purity and not having to sell out. So I think it would be... I'd be fine with it not being a super profitable business if it, you know, if it basically gave some journalists in a few different cities reliable and good work, and it, you know, and it helps the population at large. Which, that to me is more interesting than, like, you know, squeezing every last cent out of it I can by serving up advertorial rubbish.
Yes, and I think that, to relate this a little bit to quote-unquote modern marketing, you maybe you need this editorial integrity. Let's say you create the Tokyo Cheapo or any other cheapo guide, and let's say that's a little booklet or whatever. It helps people obviously save money or spend less. There might be a good chance that for the, I don't know, 10, 20 bucks that you pay for the guide, you get that back. You get, you know, factor X of that back, through using it. And that, so that's one thing. So economically speaking, you could say, look, the product I'm having is absolutely, apart from all the free information on the webpage, it's nicely formatted. It's, and so on. And it's definitely worth the money. You just need to follow a couple of tips and you will easily make your money back and more. So that's one thing. But then the other thing is a lot of people still nowadays are going to look for free versions of that. So they might still refuse to pay. And I think what you can build up with the editorial integrity is some kind of like a deposit of goodwill with your audience, so that they might think, well, you know, I already have read so and so many posts. I used this and this and this. And now these guys offer X thing, product, and it's definitely gonna be worth the money. And also, I really like these guys, and I know that they don't, that they follow through what they believe in. So if you have both things, that makes for a strong chance to get people to open their wallet and spend money.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest way. It's not. It's probably not fast, and it's just not easy. It's gonna be. There's a certain luxury of doing it that way, as you mentioned.
It's kind of a problem that's facing the old journalism industry. Print is dying, and a lot of the old, you know, a lot of the big name newspapers and news sources we know are having difficulty in the new digital age, where everybody wants something for nothing. So it's kind of posing this problem. What advertisers will pay for is, it's threatening that might be what the content becomes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people want everything for free. And as a result of that, the quality of what they're getting falls a lot. But then I realized, you know, a lot of the old media like The Guardian or something, you know, they've got these huge offices in central London. They're still like running printing presses. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but I imagine there's a lot of inefficiency and like the sort of guerrilla journalism type thing, like what we're doing, which is basically just, you know, just blogging and writing stuff in cafes or whatever. You know, it's like I can see that we could be a successful, sustainable business with a nice editorial team without, like, you know, we wouldn't need the big office. We wouldn't need many overheads. It wouldn't, in fact, you know, Tokyo Tipo is not far off from a, I mean, it kind of is sustainable already, really. It's, we actually make enough money. So there's, you know, we can pay for everything. It's not really profitable, but it does make enough money to keep it going. So in a sense, like, I think that there is still a future in the journalism industry, but it's just not like the super huge profitable one like it maybe was or still is. You know, it's not like there's going to be the rich media mogul empires if it carries on the way it is. You know, it's going to be the good quality content isn't going to attract the advertising, or it's, you know, to have the editorial integrity in a time where everybody wants everything free, it's going to reduce the profit margins.
So we started with utility and compared it to profit. If you're talking to entrepreneurs, they will use the terminology value. They will say you got to create value and then you're going to be rich. So is there a difference between value and utility?
I don't know. I guess I'd say that the word is basically the same, but the what you often hear in entrepreneurial circles is the kind of context is it's something that people are willing to pay for rather than something that's actually helping people.
I'm also reminded of the fact that a lot of, for example, conferences and that kind of stuff, if you look at the topics of what people are going to be speaking about, it is almost entirely covered by phrases around how much money people made.
Yeah.
And I had a little conversation the other day about the fact that, yeah, with the whole what exactly is success, and so to me, when I think about it, there's some deeply personal stuff about success, that some things that I want to mainly get done, basically have them out. I want to have them created. I want to have proof that they work and that they are, you know, that they are useful to other people and so on. But it's not so much about the money. Could also well be that is because I'm not making money, or because I'm not making money, that is because I'm thinking like that. I don't know, but one thing that's really problematic about this is basically what we're saying is that money is, and the millions are your KPI. Like that's what you're looking at in order to measure whether or not your business is successful. But there's so many what people would call intangible things. Like you would need to invent other KPIs. So for example, creating a business where people that work for the business, that work in the business, have a good time. And I'm not saying having a good time like this party and everybody's playing ping pong and nobody's really quote unquote working, but what I mean is, for example, like how do you measure the quality of the work environment you are in and the work environment you are creating? How do you measure a lot of these other factors? It's all sounds a little bit touchy-feely, but how do you, you know, measure and talk about and show? Basically, here's my assumption. What I'm thinking is that there's a lot of stuff that is invisible because it's not as, it doesn't show as much as money. Money is, you know, it's even numbers on your bank account.
It's so easy to measure because it's like a dial.
Yeah,
from 0 to 20 million.
Yeah, and you show graphs and there's, you know, and they all go, they all look like hockey sticks. And if you basically, there's only three different graphs you would need for doing any kind of business conference talk, because you need this one where it just like goes crazy at the end, and exponential growth basically. And I'm not saying that there isn't exponential growth, but that's what everybody can look at. And even if I'm thinking about what I'm doing myself in my own life, there's a lot of things that I deeply enjoy and have and experience pleasure either doing them or, for example, not having them. We talked about that stuff, like not having certain kinds of liabilities, not having to do certain kinds of things. And I get a lot of value from these. I mean, like quality of life value. But it's really hard to make them show, I mean, I can try to describe them to people, but that's the problem. There's a negative, you know, the Buddhists would say the value or the utility of a cup is not what the cup is, but the utility lies in the fact that inside the cup, there is nothing. And that means you can fill something in. So it's hard to point at something that's not there, but similar to the metaphor with the cup, a lot of utility, a lot of value, it also gets created by things that are not there.
Yeah.
And I think that's slightly related also to the, because if it's so much easier to show things in graphs that can be measured by numbers and so on and so forth. And you can make up new KPIs. A lot of industries have their own KPIs, and but yeah, that's the challenge, I think.
So I think we can actually make a list. We can make a checklist. So like, you know, the exercise for the listener is to kind of go away and not use the KPI of profit as much as like the checklist. And I would say the checklist would be things like having freedom. So can you just take afternoon naps? Are you your own boss? Do you have freedom of movement? Are you kind of generally happy every day? The real goals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's no secret now that, you know, money isn't the real goal. It's just an easy, dazzling goal, which seems to be the default that many people follow. But, you know, the studies are all out there. That's not what the goal really is.
Exactly. I often feel that I have a lot of time, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not even making the best use of my time, in a sense. I think Alan Weiss brought up this term, and he it kind of got stuck. He said, what you want and what's really valuable is not money, but I think that's the right vocabulary. I think he said discretionary time. Is that right, Chris? Discretionary time?
Yeah.
Which means time that you have at your own disposal, where you can do with it whatever you want. You can read, you can have a walk, you can sleep. Discretionary time is really something we probably have a lot of. The kinds of things I have to do during any week, the kind of things that are booked in, are it's not that much. And I know how different it was when I still was working in a job, for example, and I was crushed by having to attend meetings and be at certain places at certain times. And you know, as you said, I wasn't able to just say, well, I'm a bit tired, maybe I should take a nap. Now I can. It's awesome. Yeah. I even have a pulling, is it a pull-up bar?
Pull-up bar.
Yeah, I have now a pull-up bar. And whenever I even like take a little break, I can do a few pull-ups. And it doesn't cost much, but it's to me, it feels like great luxury.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. It's really small, but it's not insignificant.
So on topic, there's a book which is very much about this topic called Small Giants, with the subtitle Companies That Chose to Be Great Instead of Big. And I haven't actually read it, but I know it's the same kind of thing. Obviously, people choosing to not maximize for profit.
Or at least not maximizing for size.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, like size is generally going to equal more revenue. Although, you know, it's not necessarily going to make it more profitable.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same thing, you know, like the big numbers. Like you imagine you've got a table of people, there's a party, and, you know, there's Mr. X whose company's got 20 employees, Mr. Y whose company's got 50 employees, and Mr. Z who's got 4,000. And there's this kind of hierarchy in the room just because of those numbers. Whereas it might be that, you know, Mr. X, although it's only 20 companies, everyone in that company has a really great life, and, you know, they're the equivalent of providing the fresh running water in Africa, whereas Mr. Z his company's McDonald's, you know. So it's I think basically getting we should maybe change that word profit for numbers, you know, moving the goalposts away from numbers to you know, more subtle, meaningful, long-term goals.
Cool. Moving towards enlightened business.
So maybe one final point, unless you've got some more, is, you know, I don't like to kind of come up with a moral black and white, as we've talked about before. So it's not like the sense that doing the water for people in Africa is the right thing and the running a gambling site is the wrong thing. Because I don't truly think there is a right or wrong, but there are consequences. And, you know, I think it seems plausible to me that the providing for other humans, other people around you, having a kind of more sustainable, happy, meaningful life, more enlightened life, is a better long-term scenario for myself and everyone else than the scenario of kind of me maximizing my own resources. So it's like you don't even need to have a sort of moral standpoint. I think it's basically kind of a fairly rational thing that, you know, you want to look at the long-term effects of what you're doing and take that into account.
Yes, I agree. Let's finish with that.
Excellent. Full stop.
Full stop.
Morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and superheroes.
Another amazing podcast magic production.